Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim, and in this weekly segment, we speak to BBC journalists about the international stories they're tracking in the week ahead. Today, we're joined by BBC broadcast journalist Peter Ross. Peter, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Howie.
Let's start with coronavirus, and it continues to dominate the headlines, of course, with more vaccination programs rolling out around the world. What's the latest where you are?
Yeah, vaccines very much in the minds of many around the globe. I know that over in Singapore that your health authority there has been looking into the vaccine from China and also around the world, not least the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that's produced partly here in the UK and in parts of Europe as well. Now, you might remember just over a week ago that there were several European countries banned the use of this particular AstraZeneca vaccine around fears over blood clots, connections with blood clots. Now, the World Health Organization and Europe's own medicine regulator have both come out on more than one occasion to say that it thinks that this vaccine is safe and that it can't find a connection between, you know, having a jab of the AstraZeneca vaccine and blood clots. So Portugal today was one of the latest European countries to start saying that it could be used again. And the row today is the proposal by some EU leaders that it could ban exports of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine to the UK. This is obviously going to cause a bit of a brouhaha over here. The newspapers this morning dominated by the headlines. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is said to be trying to put a stop to this or trying to, you know, negotiate with Europe to make sure that there's no disruption to supplies. And this all comes at a time when, if you compare the rate of vaccination between, say, the UK and Europe, you know, that Britain certainly comes out favourably. Around half the adult population has now been vaccinated in Britain. That's compared to around 12% in Europe. And if we just take a sort of very broad general view, here in the UK, people are beginning to get excited about the summer. You know, as the days are getting longer, as the weather's getting warmer, you know, we've had a good few weeks of the latest lockdown here. Vaccinations are going into people's arms, and people are beginning to get, you know, excited about the country opening up. We've got Easter just around the corner, and very soon we'll be able to meet in gardens and start to see people a bit more regularly and a bit more often. You compare that to Europe, you've got Paris going into a lockdown on Friday. You've got the fears of a third wave in various countries, including Germany. So that's probably got, you know, in some way connected to the vaccine. And you can imagine, if you're the leader of a European country, this latest controversy appears to be over doses of this AstraZeneca vaccine made in a factory in Holland. Imagine you're in Holland, you're seeing your infection rates rise, and then you're also hearing that vaccines are leaving your country and going to the UK, where we're already doing quite well. So you can sympathise with EU leaders, but of course here in Britain, we want that vaccine, you know, supply to keep flowing.
We've just heard, though, Peter, any news, though, and feedback where you are, that results from the long-awaited US trial of that Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine are out, saying that the shot's safe and highly effective.
That's right. Yeah, we've just got news of that in the last few hours. As you say, an American trial of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, and the news looks really good, to be honest, really very good indeed. The data for older people, it suggests that all participants, including the elderly, are well protected and completely protected against serious illness. So I was actually listening on the way in this morning to the radio, listening to some BBC news on the radio on the way in, and the figure that jumped out at me was that according to this American trial, the AstraZeneca vaccine is 100% effective at preventing people from falling seriously ill. Now, that's really big news, I think, because we all know that, you know, you can get COVID and not even know about it, display no symptoms and go about your everyday life. However, of course, it can also kill and can make people seriously ill. So to hear that this vaccine is 100% effective at stopping people getting seriously ill, well, that can only be really, really good news.
And it says no safety issues regarding blood clots, so hopefully that'll assuage some of the European Union countries, right?
Again, you've got to remember that we were getting this message from the beginning, that there was no clear signal that there was, you know, I think the figure was something like 40 blood clots. And if you didn't test the public for, if you took out whether they'd had a COVID, you know, vaccination or not, you would just expect to see around about 40 blood clots in the number of people that they tested. It's a kind of normal occurrence. So they couldn't draw that line between, you know, having the jab and whether it caused blood clots. Again, the other thing to say is what this does for vaccine confidence. In the UK, vaccine confidence is really high and has been growing since jabs first started to go into people's arms. It's a sort of FOMO, a fear of missing out. Once people hear that their neighbours and their, you know, their granny or their dad has had a jab and they're fine, and they've not had some horrible consequences subsequently, well, then suddenly people want to take it. And they realise, again, as I said, as the weather gets warmer, as the days get longer, they realise with this jab and everybody else getting a jab, life can maybe go, you know, and I use inverted commas, back to normal, whatever that might be.
So also this week, Peter, Myanmar marks the 76th anniversary of the foundation of the army. Each year, the event's commemorated with a large military parade. This year's events, though, follows a military coup last month, weeks of protests, brutal crackdown. What's the latest there and what can we expect this week?
Yeah, as we know, protests have gripped the country since that military coup last month. The protesters want to return to their democratically elected civilian government. That was after the military seized control on February 1st. The military claimed there was widespread fraud in last year's election. Since then, as you said, the military, there's been widespread protests in cities around the country, and the military has brutally cracked down on those protests. Official figures from the United Nations say at least 149 people have died so far, but it really is thought that far more have died. I think I've seen reports in local reports yesterday that figure could be, you know, almost 300, but again, they expect it to be higher. Hmm. That violence shows no sign of abating, and indeed, the military itself has said, you know, soon after seizing power, and it's not changed this line, we've not heard anything else from them to suggest this is not going to be the case, that they are they've declared a year-long state of emergency, and at the end of that year, they'll hold, quote, what they say, free and fair elections. Now, the military, one thing to say, military influence, particularly, Myanmar has been making great strides towards being, you know, a democratically run society in the last few years, what with democratic elections and whatnot. However, as that's all been going on, the military had remained influential, particularly their commander-in-chief, General Hilang. He's the man in charge right now. He's the man who's leading this coup. And every year they have a big parade to celebrate the formation of the military following the Second World War, and General Hilang gives a big tub-thumping speech. Now, I think it would be difficult to say that this could be a flashpoint this week because, you know, the protests are ongoing. We saw protests over the weekend again reports of casualties. Protesters say they're going to be back out on the streets tomorrow. But so while it would be unfair to maybe describe it as a flashpoint because things are already pretty bad as they stand, it will also be interesting to see what a big military parade with a big speech by the general, how that goes down amidst all of everything else that's going on.
Any sign, though, Peter, that international condemnation, there's been a lot of the military coups having any effect at all?
Well, as you say, yes, there has been military, there has been widespread international condemnation. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it was a serious blow to democratic reforms, the military coup. The US, the UK have both come out and said, you know, have responded with sanctions on the military officials. Many Southeast Asian countries have strongly condemned and are pursuing diplomatic efforts. But as of yet, I'm afraid to say that there's no real indication that the military is going to soften its stance.
Hmm. Delegations, though, from India and Pakistan, Peter, will meet in Delhi on Tuesday to discuss a water distribution treaty. The sides usually meet annually to reaffirm the Indus Water Treaty, but this will be the first meeting in over 2.5 years. It could be a point to thaw relations between the two nations. Tell us more about this treaty and why it's significant.
Absolutely. Well, listen, significant access to water is a significant global issue, isn't it? If we think, you know, for example, China's got many big dam projects, which, you know, you've got countries in that region that are critical of how that affects their water supply further down the river. You could see similar arguments in, say, North Africa, where various countries are at loggerheads with access to the waters of the River Nile. And this week, this big global issue is going to be mirrored by the big rivals, India and Pakistan, who are often at loggerheads. As you say, they're going to meet to discuss the Indus Waters Treaty. And as you also said, they've not met for 2.5 years.
Mm.
They're supposed to meet every year. This was signed in 1960. And effectively, it was designed to, you know, as I said, these two countries are often at loggerheads. They need to get together and discuss how they can live side by side. And in 1960, they signed this treaty, which gave India exclusive access and rights to three eastern rivers, the Sutlej, the BS, and the Ravi, and it allocated the exclusive rights for the western rivers, the Indus, the Jhelum, and the Chenab, to Pakistan. As I said, they usually meet once a year to discuss any issues around those water supplies. Say one side wants to build a dam or a hydroelectric power station, something like that. And it's a good sort of weather vane for how the two sides are getting on if they meet every year and can manage to, you know, to heed each other's objections. For example, after the 2018 meeting, India allowed a Pakistan delegation to go and have a look at a couple of hydroelectric factories there just to see what was going on. Now, as you've said, they've not met in 2.5 years. Now, that could be because of the coronavirus. Some people have suggested that. However, it could also just be because, well, relations were at, I wouldn't quite go as an all-time low. They've fought a few wars since they both gained their independence. But you'll remember that the disputed region of Kashmir, which Pakistan controls a portion of and India controls a portion of, in 2019, India unilaterally decided to change the special status of occupied Kashmir, and that did not go down well in Pakistan. So perhaps that's one of the reasons they have not met for the last wee while. But again, this is a good sign that relations might be getting a bit warmer, that they're now going to start this annual meeting again to discuss water rights.
Peter, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Thanks very much, Ali. Cheers.
Peter Ross, broadcast journalist at the BBC. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.